From WNYC New York Public Radio, this is The Brian Lehrer Show. I'm Brian Lehrer. This is just one segment of our show, but every interview is available on demand at WNYC.org. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC On Demand is supported by Open, how American Express serves small business. Open offers a range of products and services designed exclusively for small business. Details at 888-779-OPEN or open.com.
Democratic Senator Robert Menendez joins us now as we continue our coverage of the hotly contested U.S. Senate race in New Jersey between Menendez and the Republican nominee, State Senator Tom Kaine Jr. Senator Menendez, thanks a lot for coming back on WNYC again during this campaign. Good morning.
Good morning, Brian. Great to be with you and your listeners.
You're making the war in Iraq a central issue, but Mr. Kaine has called for Donald Rumsfeld's resignation. How different are you two on what to do next in Iraq?
Brian, we're fundamentally different. Not only did I vote against the war in Iraq, I have been supportive of a transition out of Iraq over the course of a year, a transition that basically the Iraqi Prime Minister and National Security Advisor has said is one in which they will have the wherewithal within a year, maybe a year and 18 months, to be able to have their own security ability to stand on their own. It would also send a very clear message to the Iraqis. They have to make the hard choices, compromises, and negotiations necessary for a government of national unity. We'd bring a fair number of our troops home, but leave a contingency over the horizon out of Iraq within the region to send a very clear message to others. This is not their opportunity to seek to engage inside of Iraq, and we'd be creating a summit that would bring in NATO and regional partners who will have a clear interest in the stability of Iraq but won't do anything unless for so long as they believe that we will continue to be there staying the course in an endless occupation.
Can I get you to be a little more specific? You said bring home a fair number of troops. Congressman Murtha's bill says all the troops out and redeployed in 6 months.
Right. Well, we would eventually bring all of our troops out of Iraq. The question is, and I'd listen to some of our military advisors, obviously, as to what would be a contingency outside of Iraq within the theater sufficiently to act both in our interest in the region as well as to send a very clear message to others that this is not their opportunity to engage inside of Iraq. But, I mean, overwhelmingly, we'd be bringing our troops home. The difference between me and my opponent is that even with the benefit of hindsight, of knowing that we have lost nearly 2,800 American lives, of knowing that we have spent $380 billion and that we continue to spend each and every month another $8 billion, that he still says he would have voted for the war and largely supports its present prosecution. Calling for the resignation of Donald Rumsfeld, 6 or 8 weeks before an election, after you've been silent since 4 years ago when this vote was taken, is obviously a tactic, not a principled position.
And you voted
pretty transparent.
You voted against the war originally, unlike Senator Clinton, unlike Senator Kerry.
I did. Obviously everybody looks at the set of circumstances and makes their own personal decision what they believe is in the best interest of the people they represent. I have two questions when I vote on war and peace, which is also about life and death. Is this in the national security interest of the United States, and am I willing to send my son and daughter? Because if I am, then because I believe it is in the national security interest, then I will vote to send anyone else's son and daughter.
And even with what people thought they knew then about weapons of mass destruction and Al-Qaeda ties?
Yeah, I got to be honest with you. I did my due diligence then as a member of the House of Representatives. I went through a lot of material. I went to the intelligence briefings. I asked tough questions. And, Brian, at least from my perspective, it became very clear to me that unlike Afghanistan, where I supported the president and the answer to both of those questions, it was in the national security interest, and yes, if necessary, I'd send my son and daughter, and therefore felt free to vote to send anyone else's son and daughter. It became very clear to me that there was no clear and present danger to the United States, no imminent threat, and above all, no evidence, underlying evidence, of weapons of mass destruction, and so I voted against the war.
And one thing about what the president says now, which is regardless of how we got in or what turned out to be true, that pulling out before the Iraqi government is really prepared to stand on its own would send a terrible signal to the rest of the world that the U.S. might cut and run from their causes if the kitchen gets too hot. Are you not afraid of that?
No, I we heard the same arguments during Vietnam. We see that even Senator Warner, who just came back recently from Iraq, has talked about that we have to change the course in what we're doing in Iraq. We see the British commander of forces in Iraq saying that, in fact, that they are exacerbating the problem, not making it better by their presence there. We see Senator Hagel of Nebraska talking about changing. Our policy shouldn't be dictated, should be dictated by our national interests and our national security interests, and I'm not convinced that based upon the last national intelligence estimate that staying in Iraq is meeting our goals, including making sure that we have the wherewithal to fight terrorism and meet other global challenges like North Korea and Iran.
Senator Robert Menendez, my guest on WNYC, as we continue our coverage of the hotly contested U.S. Senate race in New Jersey. And, Senator, New Jersey is such a blue state at this point, and yet the polls continue to have this race pretty close. Why do you think that you're not running away with this race?
Well, this is a state that is a late deciding state, historically so. It's interesting, I was talking to Governor Corzine the other day, and he said, well, Quinnipiac had you at 49. At this time last year, I was at 45 and spent a lot more money than you. So I think we're trending in the right direction. We've had 2 weeks, five different polls all showing me in the lead. And I think as people in a late deciding state focus in on the race and see the fundamental differences between myself and Tom Kaine Jr., on the war, he supports it, would have voted for it. I opposed it, want to transition out. On stem cell research, I am a huge supporter of embryonic stem cell research because of my mother's Alzheimer's and so many others I've met with different diseases and illnesses and the cures that could come from pursuing embryonic stem cell research. My opponents voted against it six times in the New Jersey legislature. My support for raising the minimum wage, he voted against raising the minimum wage in New Jersey. I opposed the president's privatization of Social Security. As the chairman of the House Democratic Caucus last year when I was still in the House, my opponent supported it. When the president came to Westfield, his hometown, he sat in the front row and was an advocate of the president's privatization of Social Security. So on all of these issues, when New Jerseyans focus in and see the fundamental differences, I am convinced that they will continuously head in the direction that I am headed in right now, but where the polls have us up.
But on New Jersey as a late-breaking state, the conventional wisdom, and I have to acknowledge that my callers reflect this, is that a lot of New Jerseyans are disgusted by the president's policies and the Republicans in general for all the reasons that you just named, but feel that Democrats in general in New Jersey, and including you, are tied up with the same old New Jersey Democratic machine of Torricelli and McGreevy and Hudson County that they consider ethically challenged. What would you say to my swing voter listeners to assuage their concerns about that?
Well, you know, my opponent has he's a one-trick pony, and the trick is to constantly try to, when you're wrong on the issues, you have to smear because you fear people knowing, in fact, where you stand on the issues. There's only one candidate in this race for the United States Senate who stood up to a corrupt political regime of his own party, who testified against it, who as a result of that had to wear a bulletproof vest because his life was threatened, and that was me. My opponent tried to suggest that that was not the truth, and four assistant U.S. attorneys who prosecuted the case at the time, in articles in the New York Times and Star Ledger, were quoted as saying I was honest, courageous, and gutsy. And so there's only one candidate in this race who has actually had to stand up to a corrupt political regime of his own party. That's me. My opponent's been silent in the face of Republican scandals in Washington, silent in terms of Republican scandals in New Jersey and Monmouth County and other places where mayors have gone away. He served in the Senate in the midst of Republican state Senate presidents having to resign, and he said nothing. So he has not been a reformer in that respect. And the toughest pay-to-play legislation the state ever passed, he voted against it. So, I mean, there's only one candidate who has a history of standing up to reform, not just calling themselves a reformer.
But let me ask you briefly about the two ethical questions surrounding you in the news right now. One is you're being investigated by the Senate Ethics Committee for being the landlord to a nonprofit organization that you helped get federal funding for. Is that not a conflict of interest?
Well, first of all, I'm not being investigated by the Senate Ethics Committee. What happened is two Republican legislators in New Jersey, associates of Tom Kane Jr., filed a complaint. So it is their false complaint, which, you know, you can't stop anyone from filing a complaint. And obviously, in an election cycle, they file a complaint, and therefore the committee will have to respond to their complaint. But that, this was a transaction that was done 12 years ago, approved by the House Ethics Council, who recently reiterated that it was the type of transaction she would have approved, for a piece of property I don't even own anymore, haven't owned in over 3 years, for an agency that receives its resources not by my advocacy for them, but in essence by the very fact that they get their money through a formula. So it's campaign season, so we get Republican legislators who file ethics complaints for the purposes of creating an issue.
But you have claimed that you got verbal clearance by a federal ethics official for that situation, but you have, as I've read it, no document to prove it. That person is now dead, and on the date that you gave when he cleared you, he did not hold that job. So what should my listeners make of that?
Brian, you've got your facts wrong. The woman who has been quoted in local press accounts by the independent press was the counsel of the House Ethics Committee who reviewed the transaction, who said when the facts were presented to her again that, yes, it would have been an ethical transaction. And she also said that it's not unusual for members of Congress to get verbal approvals of a wide range of issues. So the bottom line is that that's what your listeners should read. They should read the accounts of the House Ethics Council who said that. The person you're referring to, when I was asked in the first instance, I said, well, I think it was so-and-so. And then they found out through press reports of 12 years ago, Brian, that in fact it was this lady who was the House Ethics Council at the time, and who most recently, a couple weeks ago, said that in fact it would have been a ethically approved transaction.
And the other issue is this audio tape that surfaced showing Donald Skorinsky, one of your closest friends and chief fundraisers, pressuring a local official 7 years ago to hire someone as a favor to you. What do you say to that?
Yeah, and I say that that is a conversation between two individuals of which I was not a party and certainly would not have been a part of. Brian, the problem with this is that this is my opponent. He gets to have you reiterate along with everybody else these constant challenges. I could talk about a whole list of ethical challenges that my opponent has.
And believe me, we reiterate to him, too.
At the end of the day, I don't think that moves us forward, in a direction as to how do we transition out of Iraq, how do we ensure a change in the economy of this country that doesn't see massive debt, the greatest debt the nation's ever had, and rising incomes versus stagnant wages.
And we're going to get back to some other issues in just a minute, but just to finish the thought on this audio tape, because New Jersey voters are concerned perennially about ethics, are you saying that this good friend of yours, chief fundraiser of yours, was pressuring somebody to hire you, hire someone as a favor to you, but without your approval?
No, of course not. I mean, I don't know what he was doing. All I know is that I was not a party to that conversation. It's certainly anything that he had in that conversation in invoking my name was not in my direction, and as a result of that, he no longer has any relationship with our campaign.
Senator Robert Menendez, my guest on WNYC as we continue to cover the hotly contested New Jersey senatorial race. And, Senator, let me see where you are on a bunch of other issues. Number one, do you support the crackdown in Riverside, New Jersey, on landlords and contractors who hire or rent to illegal immigrants?
No, I don't believe that municipal ordinances trying to pursue immigration enforcement is the right approach. I think it creates all types of problems within a community. It potentially has the problems of discriminating against those who are either permanent residents or U.S. citizens, but who may look a certain way. This is the failure of the federal government, and particularly under the Bush administration, to have comprehensive immigration reform. And ultimately, that immigration reform, the bipartisan approach that the Senate took and that I supported, which is both tough and smart, is what we need to do, not to have individual communities like Riverside try to do immigration enforcement, which is a federal issue.
Another issue. Many Democrats, as you know, are concerned about honest vote counting and voter suppression. Should they be concerned about that for this election in New Jersey?
Well, I am a supporter of Congressman Rush Holt's verification through a paper trail. Unfortunately, we won't have that in this election. And I'm certainly hopeful of that at the end of the day we have a transparent election, one that isn't in any question. I am concerned, as I increasingly hear of accounts in which there are preparations being made by the Republican side to do what we call voter suppression. We have a history in New Jersey. There's actually a federal order against such activities because of a history of the Republican Party going back to the time in which Tom Kane Sr. was governor, that in fact we have a whole history of voter suppression in the state, and we are concerned, and we'll have a very large legal team present on that day to ensure that every voter has the right to vote and will vote.
Interesting. If the Democrats gain control of Congress, will you support investigations or even impeachment proceedings against the president?
Well, I believe clearly that one of the most important roles of the Congress can and should play is aggressive oversight. And I would say that whether it's a Democratic or Republican president sitting in the White House.
What would that mean in this case? What would you initiate?
It would mean asking, bringing hearings and including bringing witnesses under subpoena if they're not willing to come voluntarily, as to how did we fail the people of the Gulf Coast in Hurricane Katrina? How is it that we have an Iraq policy that has lost so many lives, that has cost so much money, and that is not headed in a direction of achieving any successful result? How is it that Halliburton gets the type of contracts that they get and leaves so many of the critical services in a underfunded way? How is it that the oil industry writes the energy legislation versus energy legislation that creates energy independence and security? Those are some of the things I'd see be very critical to be asked and on behalf of the American people.
Do you support a single-payer, Medicare-for-all-style health system for the United States?
Well, I support seeking universal coverage. How we achieve that, I'm not sure that a single-payer system, as you just described, it is one that I would support, but I would consider it. I do think that, you know, my legislation that passed the Congress and one of the few pieces of health care legislation and major advocacy of the American Cancer Society, Patient Navigator, Chronic Disease Prevention Acts, bringing people into federally qualified health centers, moving our system from a disease base to a preventive system so people don't go to emergency rooms, expanding what I have as a member of Congress should be the opportunity for every citizen in my state of New Jersey and across the country, expanding the federal employees' health benefits program, increasing the S-CHIP program to make sure that more children who increasingly don't find health care coverage are covered. That those are all ways in which we expand dramatically the universe of people to make sure that they do not go to sleep at night worried that they have no health care coverage whatsoever.
We have about 3 minutes left with Senator Robert Menendez as we continue our coverage on WNYC of the hotly contested New Jersey Senate race. And let me just use it to touch another couple of issues. If the Democrats gain the majority, should you roll back any of President Bush's tax cuts?
Well, I certainly believe they got to be paid for. And as a member of the Budget Committee, I offered amendments this year to pay as you go, which means that if you're going to have a tax cut and or a spending program, that you have to come up either with the revenue source for it or the appropriate spending cut to meet the expenditure you're asking for.
But that's not a yes or no on the tax cuts themselves.
Well, the question is, you know, I'm willing to look at the totality of the tax cuts. The reality is there I want to focus tax cuts that are geared more to middle-class families. I have a problem with some of the highest income tax cuts in a way that are disproportionate, that are driving the debt, and ultimately don't help middle-class families meet their challenges.
The president says the tax cuts resulted in the lower deficit this year by fueling the economy. Do you disagree?
Oh, I disagree. And all I see is rising debt. I sit at the Senate Budget Committee, and the Congressional Budget Office tells us that if we continue the direction we're on, we'll be looking at $12 trillion worth of debt by the year 2011. I think that is directly a consequence of the present fiscal policy the president has that has rising debt and stagnant wages instead of rising incomes.
The Republicans, you know, are running nationally on what they say is the scary specter of Nancy Pelosi as Speaker of the House. Do you want to defend her as right for that job?
Nancy Pelosi is very competent, and she's also very pragmatic. And I think that she has shown in her leadership in the House of Representatives that she has the wherewithal to lead the country, certainly as a leader of the House of Representatives, potential Speaker of the House, in a way that ultimately would unite people in this country, not divide them.
And Senator Reid in the Senate, the Democratic leader, are you concerned about the ethics of his land deal that's been in the news?
I've known Harry Reid now for the last 9-10 months. I've known him before, obviously, but not as intensely. I find him to be an honest individual, and I'm sure that as all the facts unfold, we'll see that he is a person of honesty and integrity.
And last question. I hear the National Republican Party has just done some polling to see if Senator Kaine is worth more of their money or if it's a lost cause against you. What would you advise them?
Well, it's going to be a lost cause no matter how much money they spend. The reality is if you're wrong on your support for the war in Iraq, if you're wrong on voting against embryonic stem cell research, wrong on voting against the minimum wage in New Jersey, wrong on supporting the president's privatization of Social Security, all the money in the world can't help you win an election with those positions.
Senator Robert Menendez, I guess this will probably be your last time on before the election. So as I say to all the candidates, good luck. And if you win, we look forward to having you back many times as an elected member of the U.S. Senate. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Brian. Look forward to all those many times.
That interview with Senator Menendez was pre-recorded. We'll have Tom Kaine Jr. in an interview tomorrow morning. After that Menendez interview taping, his office sent us a newspaper article by Herb Jackson of The Record that they said should clear up some of my questions about the ethics issue. So coming up in a minute, we'll speak with Herb Jackson about that and the impact of the New Jersey Supreme Court gay marriage ruling on this race. Stay with us, Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Thanks for listening to The Brian Lehrer Show from WNYC New York Public Radio. You can hear everything we do and check out our other programs on demand at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. And thanks.